This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And it's the X-Trays. We all are fired.
You know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gon' make someone around me catch a body like that.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 3 of Clotheslines and Headlines, the only podcast place to be for all of your current wrestling talk around the world, WWE and beyond. I am your co-host, JT Rosero. Joining me, as always, in my group of three musketeers here, becoming the close-knit group of podcast hosts that delivering great action to you each and every week, each and every other week, I guess. Steve Willey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling fresh. I'm ready to go. I only have a couple hours tonight because I'm lined up in between Ted Cruz and Mike Pence. I'm going to just wave to all my fellow white people over at the Republican National Convention.
And standing outside is Nate Milton. Nate, how you doing?
Oh, wait, hold on. What's going on, guys? I mean, I've got to make sure my voice is coming across excellently on these microphones because, as our guest last time, Hugh Little said, I should be nominated for Podcast Voice of the Year. So hopefully I'm coming across both articulate and entertaining.
Well, now that we're in tight with Hugh, that means we're in the bag for the sheedy, so I'm sure you'll be up for best voice, and you're way better than Johnny Sorrow anyway. So, all right, we got a great
episode. I need to drink a little bit more. start smoking again.
All right, we have a great episode lined up for you here tonight. We're going to be talking some WWE, of course. Brian Bayless will be here talking draft. We're going to talk about the new commentary team alignments, as well as previewing this weekend's Battleground. Aaron George, our TNA correspondent.
Yes.
He hates it, but this is what he is. We'll be talking live deletion, the fallout from final deletion. We'll talk about Moose. We'll talk about Lashley, the overall direction of TNA in general. And then, of course, to wrap things up is our very special guest here tonight, the booker of the CWF, Brad Stutz, who's also been doing some work on the side as an extra in the final deletion skit. So he'll talk all about behind the scenes filming with the Hardys at the Hardy compound for final deletion. He'll be giving his thoughts on the WWE draft as well, and then previewing some upcoming CWF shows. So Nate and Steve, how you been? All right. Anything you want to cover here before we dive into the show?
I don't think anything big has happened, Steve. I'm kind of, been engrossed with this Republican convention, but Steve, has there been any big news in the world of pro wrestling or MMA or maybe something that kind of brings both together?
I don't know. I've been having a bad emergency asthma attack, and I purchased this inhaler. I hope it doesn't affect my payday for this show.
It shouldn't. Hopefully. We'll see.
Is he going to pass the PTBN wellness policy?
Yeah, because I don't want to give half of my money to Mark Hunt. That's all I got to say.
All right. Well, with that, why don't we take an early break so Steve can, hit the inhaler, and then we'll come back. We'll bring in Brian Bayless to talk some WWE.
Sounds so soulful, don't you agree? I ain't finna sweat. Popping bottles, putting supermodels in the cab.
Consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Yeah. Let's take them back. Uh-huh. Coming up, I was confused. My mommy kissing a girl. Confusion occurs coming up in the cold world. Daddy ain't around, probably out committed felonies. My favorite rapper used to sing, check out my melody. I want to live good, so shit, I sell dope.
All right, Place to Be Nation, we are back for break here on episode number 3 of Clotheslines and Headlines, and we are going to dive right in, as we usually do, with some WWE talk. And joining us here for the first time on our show, you may know him because he's quite sneaky and flea post pieces at PlaceToBeNation.com. He's our weekly Raw recapper. He recapped SmackDown live last night. You can catch him, I think, like 15 times a week posting stuff over Scott Keith's blog of doom. And he's going to be a co-host of the brand new Scott Keith's podcast of doom coming next week to PlayStation.com on our iTunes feed as well. And that is Mr. Brian Bayless. Brian, how you doing?
Doing excellent. Thank you guys for having me tonight.
Of course. And a veteran now of the game, so it's good to have you here with us. And like I said, you're pretty well versed in the product of WWE because you review Raw every week, and of course you reviewed SmackDown. And what we wanted to do is just dive right in. So we're going to be covering a couple of things in this segment. We're going to talk draft. We're going to talk about the fallout, kind of how the roster shook out. We're going to talk about the formatting of last night's show, the formatics, as some may say. And then we're going to, of course, preview Battleground, which is coming up this weekend. It is kind of a weird show, like kind of lame duck, but not really. It's kind of kicking off the new era, but kind of ending the old one. So it's some weird stuff going on with that show we'll talk about. But, Brian, first, give us your thoughts on last night's SmackDown Live and how the roster shook out.
Regarding the rosters, I was not a fan of how they were split up at all. I thought they did a terrible job doing that. I thought the SmackDown roster is completely depleted. I thought on Raw, there's a lot of talent in the mid-card on Raw who really needs to bust out and would benefit from a split, but they're all together now. I don't know how they're going to break out all together in the same roster. I feel guys like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and Cesaro are going to fight each other to another year straight and just trade wins, and it's not going to mean anything for them. On SmackDown, watching the draft, I think they're going to really push Baron Corbin hard as one of the top heels. I don't know how that's going to turn out. He's not done anything at all over 3 months on the main roster. But they only have about five or six heels on the roster on SmackDown already to begin with, so he's going to be pushed pretty hard, I think. I was really not a fan of how the rosters ended up at the end of the night.
The interesting thing, too, with SmackDown is it's very top-heavy. Like, I thought they did well for the first few picks. And then when you look at the depth is where they really are getting slaughtered. Like, just after, you know, Ambrose, Cena, AJ Styles, you know, and I guess they got, I don't even know. That's pretty much it, I guess. But
yeah, it went south quick.
Yeah, I mean, after them, it drops off a cliff. But I feel like they're really good up at the top. So if those three guys just keep fighting, they'll be in okay shape. But there was one interesting in the slew of the swamp over the blog of doom. There's one really good comment, I thought, that you know, basically pointed out that SmackDown may be the show that kind of eliminates or says goodbye to the 50-50 booking, and that if you kind of look at who they have, there's a kind of a handful in there of you know, of competitors that maybe they're going to get behind younger guys and women like Becky Lynch, that they'll put over kind of the scrubs that they filled out the roster with and then prep them to either move to Raw or move up to the main event scene. So maybe we won't see as much trading of wins. Maybe we'll just see some of these guys dominate more, like an Apollo Crews, like I said, like Becky Lynch, like, I don't know who else in there. Dolph maybe. I feel like there's... They needed, like, one more of that bunch of either Rusev, Owens, Cesaro. Like, one of those guys had to be over on SmackDown. Like, them all being on Raw, to me, was overkill. Like, they have a lot of that same cluster of guys over there.
And I saw a report earlier today, too, that I don't know if it's true or not, but it said Cesaro and Enzo and Big Cass were actually going to be part of SmackDown, and they switched it the last second. I thought that'd be really beneficial to SmackDown if that was the case.
Yeah, definitely. Nate, what do you think of how the rosters kind of shook out here?
Man, I was severely disappointed. You know, I know you guys might not be the right demographic for this reference, but, you know, I got a sister that's about 5 years younger than me. And one of her favorite shows was Tyra Banks, America's Next Top Model. Mm-hmm. And Tyra's got this iconic scene on the show where she's yelling at this one girl. And she's like, you know, I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. How dare you do this? Learn something from your mistakes. And that's how I felt looking at the way this roster was broken down. And it's like, man, a lot of the choices did not make sense to me. And granted, you know, this is just the first reaction. You know, they've got time to tell these stories. But why would you have Owens and Zayn on the same roster? Why would you have Cesaro and Jericho in that mix, that mid-card mix, if you will, still bunched up on the same show? The choices for NXT didn't make any sense whatsoever. So I thought from a production standpoint, yeah, the show was a solid show. But from a logical standpoint, it didn't make sense. And, you know, you bring up a guy like Cesaro, who I think this could have been his big breakout moment. And if you were watching the Draft Central on the network, which I wasn't watching that live at the time because that was a little too much for WWE to be asking of me, but I saw clips later, and it's like, you could tell this dude was legitimately disappointed about not being moved because he knows he's going to be stuck back in that same mix. And I thought they had a chance to really shake things up, but unfortunately they moved the deck chairs, but it's the same situation. And Raw just looks to be the more entertaining show. And I never thought I would say that as we were heading up to this brand split.
And he cut a hell of a promo. I mean, that was very inspired. And a lot of them did, actually. So, Steve, you actually had a different... you took this, you know, in a different way. You actually only watched the network throughout the whole thing. You didn't watch SmackDown at all. So what were your thoughts just watching it from that perspective?
Yeah, I actually got sucked into it the first few minutes while I was doing some stuff around the house. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I want to change the channel because it was the everything that I dislike about the main show. They were doing the opposite on the Draft Central, where everything comes off as so scripted and forced, where even the ad libs seem like they don't fit in. This was just like, it was like a, you know, an actual draft, you know, like you would see on an NBA TV or an NFL TV. They're just got, there's Renee and Booker and Lita and Corey Graves, and they were just riffing. And so it seemed more interesting, and they had a lot of unscripted moments and unscripted interviews with the competitors after they were drafted. And what that's what gave you that Cesaro moment of, you know, shock and legitimate disappointment that he was picked so low and that he wanted to go to SmackDown. And I think, man, if they took a look at that, and probably because, like, you know, your Vince McMahon and your Kevin Dunn had absolutely no fingers on that because they were busy with the actual show. Can't think that's going to happen. But, man, if they used that to their advantage, it would make their show so much better. And they would explain some of the disappointment and the questionable choices. One example that was really good was when Brock and Cena did not get picked one or two, you know, question how that would affect their egos, you know, going forward. You know, Lesnar was what, picked fourth overall for Raw, I believe. Fourth overall. So, you know, you imagine, like, you know, obviously it's kayfabe, but can you imagine Brock Lesnar sitting at home being, hey, I'm the fourth best guy on Raw and the eighth overall? And, you know, even Cena was kind of ambushed by Booker T. Ambushed is a strong word. But, you know, Booker T asked right away Cena, they had a face-to-face and said, hey, are you disappointed that you got picked for SmackDown? Do you feel like you were demoted? And, you know, you could see Cena's face totally thrown off by the question. And he covered it really well. But it was really kind of a refreshing. And so I think I enjoyed the draft a lot more doing that than actually watching the actual coverage. And as I look at it now today, I can see some glaring holes. But I also don't think they're done. I think this was just how they're going to get it started.
Right. How
I
don't think... split things up initially. I think there's a lot of moving pieces still because you've got more people in NXT. The people that they've mentioned, like Meltzer has said about signing, like the kind of the veterans, how are they going to intersperse them? And, you know, you mentioned the, Nate, I think it was you that mentioned the disappointment over the NXT stuff. You know, I was talking to Brad Woodling about this earlier. You know, they could have solved it very easily by just saying either any champion or anyone in the championship match at TakeOver Brooklyn is not eligible to be drafted. And that solves a lot of the issues.
Absolutely.
It explains why you're not taking Samoa Joe, why you're not taking Bayley, you know, why you're not taking Asuka. So, you know, and Nakamura. Is Nakamura fighting Joe at Brooklyn? Who's Joe?
Yes.
Right.
It's
okay.
Nakamura.
Right. So there are your four right there that you can easily explain, you know, these are your top four. You can't take them, though. They're not eligible. William Regal, the commissioner, lobbied with the board.
I was just going to say that.
You know, he said, oh, you know, you can't mess up my show, blah, blah, blah. And they agreed to leave them. Then they can come up at a later time. Like,
you can't take any of my champions. And then I took two wild cards of Bayley and Nakamura, that these are my picks that I get to keep.
Right. Exactly. And that covers it so easily. And you don't have as much complaints because you're like, okay, after that, they kind of took the, you know. There's a few here and there, like a Mojo, but even that makes sense. It's time for him to just try it, you know what I mean? But I think if they would have taken that little step there, that would have helped. And You know, I guess we haven't talked yet because we haven't really been on since they announced the GMs. Brian, what did you think of the choices for GM and how they're going to interplay with the commissioners?
I liked them. At first, I wasn't too keen on Mick Foley, but watching Raw as he interacted with Brian and Shane and he stood up for himself and, you know, when they're coming after him for being a pushover because he aligned with Stephanie. And even during the draft, he stood up for himself and he showed a good fight for the brand and fight people who are going to come after him. I like him. I like Foley in the role a lot. I actually thought Brian came off like an empty suit last night. He barely did anything at all.
Yeah.
And he has so much charisma coming off of Raw on Monday that he really could have done something really heavy with that. And even, you know, the whole draft they kept on, before the draft, they kept on touting SmackDown as a brand that people got bust through the glass ceiling, people get new opportunities. And he drafted no one at all. Really.
Well,
really,
and he tried to explain it on the post show where he was like, well, what we really meant was people that have like heart. And that's why he explained like Cena being the choice. But I mean, it was, you know, obviously they're trying to kind of back their way into explaining.
Yeah.
like Corbin, Del Rio and Rowan.
Right. Most of that glass of fucking Rowan. I mean, yeah, when you look at the picks on paper, but I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's tough because you got to look at it, I guess, through their eyes, right? In Dodie's eyes, Rowan is like a player, I guess. I don't know. How else do you explain it?
I was taking notes before the show when I knew we were going to be talking more about this, and I just looked down the roster of SmackDown, and I said, AJ, American Alpha, and all played out. Because that's pretty much what you got, except for maybe the club. No, the club's on
Raw
as well. If there's... You know, Orton played out. Cena played out. Bray played out. Miz, you know, kind of reinventing himself with Maurice. Baron Corbin didn't do any, you know, not really doing much. Ziggler played out. Del Rio played out. Kane played out. Kalisto, okay. Zack Ryder, Apollo Crews.
I think Kalisto might be cooked after his friggin' interview. Yeah. I'm going to hear it to do good lucha, whatever the hell he said.
I didn't. That was the one thing I didn't see. I'll have to pick that up. The Charlotte botch was one of my favorites, too, where Booker asked her a question and she just kind of giggled for 30 seconds. If you haven't seen that, that's a good one to look up.
I almost feel like, and this is, I know that this is too strong of a term to use, but it kind of felt like a bait and switch because we've been told that SmackDown was going to be this different show. SmackDown was going to be the worker show. SmackDown was going to be the show that gave opportunity. And at the end of the day, I'm looking at this SmackDown roster, and it's not that impressive. And it feels like, you know, back in the day when you used to trade baseball cards. And I'm like, hey, Steve, I'll trade you Ken Seiko for Griffey. And you're like, okay, Griffey's better, but I like Jose, so I'll take that trade, Nate. And I hand over Canseco, and you hand me Griffey, and we go on our merry way. And everything's all fine and good, Steve, until you look down and realize that I did not, in fact, give you Jose Canseco. I gave you Isaac Canseco.
Oh,
and that is like, what I feel like with this SmackDown draft, man.
Did it have the fuck face in the bottom of the baseball bat, since we're talking 90s baseball cards?
Oh, man.
And, you know, I get why they did what they did for Raw, because it is 3 hours, and they want to be able to fill it out a little bit more than SmackDown, but they could have balanced it just a little bit more. I mean, and maybe they will. Like we said, they're not done yet. There's still other guys out there that could be brought up, and maybe other ones. I think Del Rio is actually a guy that has a real good chance, maybe like a last-ditch effort to kind of turn things around for himself. I think they're going to turn him face. So maybe it's a chance for him to re-elevate up the card into the main event scene as a face and capture some of the energy he had in his first run.
But you didn't need all the and I think it was you, JT, that made the point that you don't need a whole lot of changes to improve this SmackDown roster, but one or two would have helped. And like, right, to me, the Owen Zayn on the same brand still sticks out like a sore thumb, because we've been told, oh, this match at Battleground, it's the end. They're going to part ways after this. We're like, okay, we're parting ways, but we're still on the same show. And I think that Owens and Cesaro, if you just take those two guys and put them on SmackDown and send Baron Corbin and Rowan back, that to me fixes a lot of the issues that I have right now with SmackDown.
I saw someone in our live chat group say they should add a stip on Owens and Zayn on Sunday that the loser leaves Raw. So, I mean, maybe they could do that. Since they've been saying so much that this is it. So maybe they have a fuck finish here and then SummerSlam they do a match with a, you know, loser goes to SmackDown kind of thing.
And they do a big stip and a blow off too. And that's my devil's advocate to all this, is that my hope is that this is just, you know, there's going to be a lot of movement back and forth, not just from bringing people up, but back and forth from side to side to even things out. Not because they thought, oh my gosh, like, we screwed up this draft 24 hours later. No, because there's hopefully a story in place for people on the top. And that one makes the most sense. Okay, we haven't – your hardcore fans who watch NXT, which is, you know, maybe a quarter of the audience. If you have 4 million people watching Raw or 3 million or whatever, and you have a million subscribers to the network, assuming that all of them are watching NXT, which is obviously not the case – they haven't seen Zayn Owens completely played out yet. They haven't seen a big blow-off match. You did in NXT. If you followed him on the indies, you saw it there. But they haven't done that on the main roster. And if it's not done on the main roster, it didn't happen in Vince McMahon's world. So I can see that happening, what you said, JR. Like, you know, SummerSlam is only a month away. Mm-hmm. It is a month from the day we are taping this, or a month and a day. So that's not that long. You have to have some stories going on. And if you just blow your load with the draft, what are you going to do afterwards? And in 60 days, we're going to be complaining that it's stale, you know, that nothing's happening. So you got to have something. And that's my devil's advocate point of view. I don't know if they're going to do that. You know, it's, you know, like Nate said, the bait and switch. They failed us many times before as fans. But the rosters are just not deep enough, especially on SmackDown. I know it's a two-hour show, but you're not going to be able to put a two-hour show together every week with what you got there.
I mean, if you remember, too, in 2002, they had that kind of open period after where they were making trades and guys could jump and whatever the hell they did. So I'm curious if they do that from now to SummerSlam and then lock the rosters in the fall. I mean, that's what they did in 02, was after SummerSlam, they finally said, okay, no more, you know, everything's frozen. So they may do something like that where, okay, now we have a kind of a free trade period where you can do different things and shift around.
And they're going to have the cruiserweights come up onto Raw after as the tournament progresses.
Yep, that too. And back to the Brian and Shane thing. It's so weird because on paper they seem like they're like the better duo, and then it's like a basketball team that I don't know. Maybe it's like Durant and Curry. Like you put these two really good guys together, and then it's not meshing. You know, it's like you're kind of waiting for it to come together, and they seemed kind of awkward together. Whereas you know, and it's. It's a new partnership. I mean, Shane hasn't been on TV regularly in however many years, and, you know, Brian's new to the role, whereas Foley and Stephanie have been in this role for, you know, over a decade together at times. So there's a much more ease about it. And Shane, I don't know what is going on with him. I don't know if it's coke or blood pressure or, you know, if he's, you know, lifting, doing deadlifts in the back before he comes out. And this is the last two nights have been just pouring sweat, and he looks all out of sorts. He's stumbling over his lines. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
I think what's going on there, man, not with Shane, but in terms of the dynamics of your leadership teams on each show, and I think Brian alluded to it, man. It's with Shane and Brian, you've got two guys who are kind of trying to fill the same role. And on Raw, at least, you know, with Foley and Stephanie, and I wasn't a huge fan of the Foley pick. Like, obviously, I respect Mick Foley, but I just didn't see him in this role. But I think with those two, you're guaranteed to have something that's at least entertaining. Whereas with Brian, he's a guy that has charisma. Shane is a guy that can't really cut a decent promo to save his life, but he's popular and people dig him. But I think two nice guys, it's not going to work. And I think eventually we'll kind of see Shane fade to the background and Brian kind of being, like Vince said on that Monday night, you know, the day-to-day guy that we see each and every week.
Brian, do you think Foley's long-term, or do you think he's just here as a kind of a space filler?
I think he's probably here long-term. And that was Daughter wants to get into the business. He has that show they're promoting, WWE Network, and he's done pretty good so far, so he seems invested in it. I think he'll be in it for a while.
What do you think, Steve?
I think a few months, if that's considered long term. You know, like I could see like a 3-4 months type thing. I don't imagine him going all the way through, like, say, WrestleMania. You know, he kind of comes and goes historically. Even when he was an active wrestler towards the end, he was coming and going. So it would be an easy way that they're just, you know, they're getting along right now, him and Steph, and then they'll move on and she'll pick someone else. You know, Triple H isn't around right now either, so. You know, how long is she going to go without her husband, you know, the two of them on the screen together?
Right, that too. There's definitely a lot of different ways they can go about it. So let's do this quick before we move on to Battleground. Nate, I'll start with you. Give me, like, your two biggest winners and your two biggest losers from the draft.
Oh, man. Let's see. I would say the biggest winner out of everyone on the draft, probably Finn Balor, because I think A, being the highest profile NXT pick, and also being picked so high. You know, Finn Balor was picked above Roman Reigns, John Cena, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, you know, Bray Wyatt, other names that are established. I think that people that have seen him on the network on NXT are ready for this dude. And just by him being picked so high, the WWE Universe at large will be excited. The only problem was I wish they would have shown his reaction live on the show last night. The other winner, and I'm saying she's a winner because I'm a winner because I get to watch her every week now on Raw, is my girl Nia Jax. So I don't know if that's the best pick, but
you stole my top two. I thought that was going to be my big hot take.
For personal reasons, that's my pick. I think she's a little green, and it's probably too soon, but hopefully she'll have a better first go around than Apollo Crews or Baron Corbin. In terms of losers, man, as of right now, unless they do any trades or anything, I would say Cesaro is a loser because he's just kind of stuck in the same exact situation that he was in. And to that end, another guy that's kind of stuck is Dolph Ziggler. So I think both of those guys are stuck. Also, any Wyatt that is not named Bray, that's kind of put out on their own. Like, ain't nobody buying tickets to see Eric Rowan or Braun Strowman.
Yeah, Rowan. And they were just kind of, I mean, I guess it's good for Bray in some ways to maybe mix things up, but I feel like they were just starting to really refocus on the Wyatt family again and, like, doing a pretty good job. I mean, there's, you know, whatever you want to say, I'm sure it'll come up at some point tonight, but whatever you want to say about the, you know, the Final Deletion ripoff thing on the compound, I mean, it is what it is, but at least they're, like, they really committed to rebuilding the family brand, and now Strowman's on his own. I mean, I guess Rowan's still on SmackDown with Bray, so they could do something together. And, of course, Luke Harper's hurt, so he didn't get drafted at all, but I don't know. I saw some wondering if, like, this would finally be when they put Bo Dallas with him, but obviously he's on a different show. And where are they going with the whole Wyatt's New Day stuff, right? Because if New Day is on Raw, you know, are they dropping the Xavier Woods and Bray stuff? Because that's been really compelling. Like, they've done a really good job. Brian, you've talked about that a lot in your recap. Tell, you know, what do you think they're going to go with there now?
I think it's going to end at Battleground. And I don't know whether they're going to go after that. Unless they do some roster trades. Maybe in Battleground they announce that of a 24-hour period they can do roster trades and they go back in the same roster. They can revisit that, but otherwise it's probably going to end at Battleground.
Yeah, it's too bad because it's been one of the better parts of TV lately is his, you know, Woods and Bray's interaction. So,
well,
Brian,
I agree.
Brian, who are your kind of, just real quick, your big losers and winners here?
For winners, I think Baron Corbin's a big winner in this. I think he has a really easy path to become a top heel on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Just by default, basically. They're going to push him. It's pretty clear they draft him pretty high. I think he was 12 overall, was he? 19th, but he was drafted high. It's not, SmackDown's very weak on heels. Right now they have AJ, Bray, and The Miz ahead of him. Another winner, I thought. Actually, I'll just go easy. Seth Rollins. Being number one just means, like, you're the man of the company, basically, right now. I think it's pretty telling. I think they really do want to push him. I think he'll be a face at some point in the next year. And he could even be the top face in the company. But they're really behind him, you can tell. He's been great.
And it's something as, like, a heel he can tell. It's almost like Jericho being the first undisputed champion. Rollins can, you know, I'm the number one draft pick. It'll be in the King of Hearts, you know, kind of thing where he can, as long as he's a heel, he can really run that out there.
He can absolutely milk that for a while. As far as losers, it's been, you know, Nate said it's Cesaro in this whole thing. He looks to be buried on Raw for the time being, which is unfortunate, but I can't, I don't know how it's going to shake it any other way. Another loser, I thought here, let me look at the roster quickly. There's a few people I thought had lost. I also think Sami Zayn is going to kind of get lost in the shuffle on Raw, too. I think he's someone who really could have broke on a SmackDown. Could have been an underdog in a Daniel Bryan mold, but on a Raw, I don't think they're going to throw him in the Cruiserweight division, but besides that, I don't think he's going to go much further than he is now. So those are my two losers.
All right, I'll give you mine, and then we'll save Steve for last, since his all got stolen by Nate. I think one of my first big winners, I mentioned him before, Alberto Del Rio, I think goes from a guy that was kind of lost with the League of Nations, kind of, you know, drowning in the mid-card overall. Now, all of a sudden, if you look at the path, like you mentioned Corbin, Brian, I mean, I look at Del Rio, and it's like, this is a guy that already has the main event cred, has title reigns to his belt, and then you look, I mean, who's ahead of him on the heel side of the roster besides AJ Styles? I mean, if they want to keep him a heel, or if they want to go face, he's, you know, Ambrose and Cena, who at this point may be part-time. You also wonder, is Randy Orton going to go heel after SummerSlam? Because
also based off of, not to cut you off, based off of Raw, they can start a Del Rio Miz feud to turn Del Rio face, too, easily.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess Miz is another guy that kind of wins, too, because if you look at the heel, this is very thin on top for heel. So I think Del Rio, if you keep him heel, him, Bray Wyatt, and Miz all really benefit. Because there's a big gap on SmackDown after AJ Styles as to who is your top heel. So those are three guys that could easily move up. Or if you flop, you know, Del Rio and Orton and have Orton go heel, you know, there's a different ways you could do it. What do you think is the idea one I had is making kind of Cena and Orton like a union or a tag team in a way? Like kind of these like older legend veterans that team up, you know, and battle these kind of newer heels, or maybe AJ hooks up with someone and, you know, just kind of they don't have to be a tag team, but they align, you know what I mean, to work together. Because we've seen the feud so many times, it'd almost be refreshing to have them be like, all right, you know, yeah, we hated each other, but now we're old grizzled veterans and we're just here to kind of hang on to our spots, and they kind of just work together at the top of the card.
I would love to see a Cena Orton versus American Alpha feud. Like, I'd actually watch that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. You know,
that'd be really fresh.
And they should do different stuff like that. When they have these thinner rosters, you kind of have to. So one of my losers, and on paper, probably just the fact that he's around and getting drafted doesn't make him a loser, but Chris Jericho, if you look at, he's been doing, you know, up and down, but he's been doing really good work so far in 2016 on, you know, netted out. Here's a guy that really could have been used on SmackDown, I thought, to buoy that heel side. And, he's been doing top-level heel work for part of the year. Why not give him that slot? When I look at Raw, I just don't see the path as easier for him when you look at the glut of mid-card that's there and guys that may suffer because he's there on the flip side and the inverse. You know what I mean? Like, do guys like Owens or Cesaro or Zayn or anyone else get held back because he's still being utilized in kind of the upper mid-card, where SmackDown could have actually benefited from having someone of his name value to balance out those top three guys. So that I'll stop there, but that's kind of my one loser I pegged that we haven't talked about yet. But Steve, go ahead. We can finish up with yours.
Sure. And I just want to piggyback off of Nia Jax. They really put her over on that Draft Central show. They stuck a camera in her face right after she got drafted, and she was about to break down because I think it was a pretty big surprise for her. And she started thinking, she thanks Sarah Del Rey, Sarah Amato for training her. And then she like took a second, composed herself, and then like just gave like a really decent interview right on the spot. And Booker T made sure to like point that out and put her over. So I think they have high hopes for her. She does need a bit of work in the ring, but she's got an amazing look. In terms of different winners, I'm going to say New Day. The fact that they were picked so high, and I feel that this might lead to some sort of, I'm not going to say split. I think they'll still be together, but they might be doing more singles things down the line. Like perhaps Big E sticking out, because if you're looking at your faces, Finn Balor was the number one picked. Roman Reigns, not totally a face. Brock Lesnar, not totally a face or a heel, depending on who he goes on. Then you got Sami Zayn, New Day. So that could easily have like a Big E or a Xavier kind of pushed up the card. And I think another winner from that brand would be Rusev. I think he's going to be able to move up to where we thought he would be after his feud with Cena. He's pretty high up there, and there's not many other heels that are around that once you get past Owens, there's a huge drop-off there. So I think he might be, you know, your maybe number three next to Rollins and Jericho, and Lesnar is kind of going to go back and forth anyways and only be there part-time. I think we're going to see a lot more of him, and I think it's deserved. He's really kind of pushed himself over the last few months, trying to get himself over despite what's given to him. In terms of losers, Cesaro's the obvious one, although I think they can actually use that and use that storyline to their advantage, and it was already on the website today. Man, I'm going to say Epico and Primo for one. and the vaudevillains as well. If vaudevillains just get called up, they're pretty much dead last. What else can you do with Epico and Primo at this point? You know, you repackage them and then show that your repackaging just sucks and pick them pretty much dead last. How are they still around? Maybe just to shore up the main event or superstars roster?
I guess, yeah. I mean, you're still going to, you know, plug that stuff up. And they may just be jobber to the stars, really. I mean, that's put over, you know, New Day and other teams, and that's just their role. Before we get to Battleground, I wanted to just mention quickly, and we can talk about the commentary team reshuffling. So Raw will now be Michael Cole, Byron Saxton, and Corey Graves. SmackDown's going to be Mauro Ranallo, Daniel Otunga, and JBL. Jerry Lawler's on the outside looking in. He'll be doing the pre-show, taking over for Graves there. Brian, what are your initial thoughts on the shakeup? I mean, it's great to see Graves get promoted. I know many wanted to see him with Mauro on SmackDown. But what do you think? How do you think these teams will you know, is it better? Is it worse than it's going to? I mean, I guess it can't be any worse than it was. But how much better do you think it'll be?
And that's the thing. It can't be any worse than it was. And just any shakeup in general to make it feel fresher, I'm all for it. I really am. It's great to see Graves in the main roster, I think, too. He's more than deserved it, I thought. He's been great in NXT. I actually didn't care for Mauro last night. I thought he was forcing some really terrible, corny jokes, and the point of it was really annoying. Hope he's more natural going forward, but I'm all for the shakeup and the announced teams. The JBL Cole Saxon team just needed to go. Well, that being changed alone makes it a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I'll be curious how much Graves improves Cole and, you know, Saxon, or does he get kind of, you know, does he get shuffled down and kind of, you know, does he lose what's made him so special in NXT? And on the flip side, is JBL, you know, getting away from Cole and kind of getting in there with Mauro and Otunga, how do they do that? Do they make Otunga, because on Raw, Saxon and Cole were both kind of faces, so JBL kind of tweener, kind of heel, but not really. Now on SmackDown, do they let Otunga play the heel role and JBL just be like the Roddy Piper 1991, where he's kind of just says what he wants? And, you know, and Ronaldo's the straight man, like, you know, Gorilla, when they used to do like Gorilla Bobby and Piper. Is it like that, where Otunga goes straight heel and they let JBL kind of, you know, play floater? What do you think, Nate?
I like these moves. You know, I think I would have liked some type of deal where we kind of worked in the Lawler thing into a storyline, kind of like when JR got drafted back in the original brand split. But that aside, I like the pairings. I do think that Corey Graves will take a slight step back, because that's just what Raw does to people and what the main roster does to people. Take Matt Stryker, for example. But I like it. I think he's going to improve Cole, and I think Byron kind of works as that good third wheel. And then on SmackDown, I think JBL is going to be reinvigorated. Even though, you know, him and Cole are buddy-buddy, I think having the analytical dude in Mauro and then kind of your old-school heel commentator with JBL, I think that's going to work. David Otunga, you know, I could take him or leave him. But to me, it's funny, you know, because when we were doing the main event the other night with Brian and Scott, you know, I was all in for Team SmackDown. But after this draft, I'm a little bit kind of sour on the roster, but I do like the commentary team. So it's like, damn, I wish I could just take this commentary team and put it on Raw, and then my Tuesday nights could be free.
But now you got Thursday to pick up too. So,
oh yeah, man, come on.
My concern with Corey Graves on Raw is that when he was on NXT with Byron Saxton, sometimes he would get too carried away with trying to bully Saxton. And forget about what's actually going on in the ring. If they can actually just focus on that and let Byron speak, because Byron, when he was on with Regal back in the FCW days, he wasn't bad. He was actually pretty good. But now he's been both on NXT and on Raw just like, you know, the guy to beat up on. That's not a storyline that's going to go anywhere. It just seems, you know, kind of pointless. Let him talk. Let him put over what's going on in the ring. So I'm glad Cole and JBL are separated. I think that JBL can actually fit into the Lawler-type role as opposed to a straight color guy. You can move Otunga to the straight color guy stuff. It's like Brian said, anytime you switch this kind of stuff up, it's good. Because how long have Cole and JBL been in at this point together. It needed to be taken care of. It needed to be broken up.
All right, let's turn our attention to Battleground this Sunday. I'm going to read the card down quickly. We're not going to preview every match, though. We're going to do things a little differently. So what we're going to do is I'll read the card, and then we're going to go around the table. I want everyone to pick their match of the night, any bold prediction they may have for any kind of upset or surprise, and then we're going to pick the main event, since that's, you know, the biggest match on the card has most ambiguity. And then we can talk a little bit macro from there. So here's the card. Sasha Banks and a mystery partner versus Charlotte and Dana Brooke. New Day versus the Wyatt family. Rusev versus Zack Ryder for the U.S. title. Miz versus Darren Young for the Intercontinental Championship. Becky Lynch versus Natalya. Cena, Enzo, and Big Cass versus The Club. Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. And Dean Ambrose versus Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins for the WWE Championship. So along with your other predictions, also pick who Sasha's mystery partner. So, Nate, let's start with you. Give me Sasha's mystery partner, your match of the night, any kind of bold prediction, and then the pick for the main.
To me, Sasha's mystery partner, in order for it to have any impact, has to be one of the debuting females. And since it's a Team Raw, it's got to be Nia Jax. So I think she's going to be the mystery partner. It'll be a solid match, and that way you can kind of hide some of Jax's deficiencies.
Do you think she turns if she's a partner? Does she turn and join Charlotte, or does she stay face?
I think she stays face initially. I think that's the initial run, and then maybe we'll see a turn after Sasha wins the title at SummerSlam. That's where I think this whole thing is headed. In terms of like what could be the standout match of the night, I think from an in-ring perspective, it's Zayn and Owens. But from a storyline perspective, I think having both guys on Raw, it's kind of taking some of the wind out of those sails for me. So I'm going to go with the main event, you know, with the Shield three-way, which is probably a match that could have been good enough to headline a SummerSlam or possibly be your, you know, number two match at a WrestleMania. I think it's that good and has that kind of story behind it. And I think Dean Ambrose has to retain just for the simple fact of if you take the world championship away from SmackDown, what else they got, man? It's like, who is it? My man in Officer and the Gentleman. He's like, I got nowhere else to go. You know, if you take the championship off of SmackDown, that show kind of becomes a B show. So I think Ambrose has to retain and, we'll see Seth and Roman kind of feud over whatever newly created belt they make on Raw.
I'm curious, too, how they do the champion thing. Does Ambrose end up bouncing a little bit because he's champion, or are they only really going to have world title programs on SmackDown until where maybe, I mean, maybe the big four where they do the interbrand, maybe that's when Raw gets its crack at take. I don't know. It'll be interesting how they do this all because they really kind of made it seem like he would just be on SmackDown with the title. But obviously, again, they've rushed some of this and haven't really explained it all. So we'll see. All right, Brian, what are your picks for those categories?
All right, I'll go bold here. For Sasha's mystery partner, I think, you know, the NXT drafts were underwhelming. I think they make up for that, and they debut Bayley as her partner. Mm. Whether it happens or not, I don't know, but I think that would be a good way to go about it. As far as match of the night, I think the three-way for the title, the former Shield guys going at it, will be a phenomenal match. And I'll stay to go bold. I believe Roman Reigns will win that match and they'll win it and turn heel in the process. I think they have to realize that coming back from suspension, no one's going to cheer this guy. It's just not working. I don't know why you'd even consider it anymore. Just shut it down, make him go here for heel for a bit. If you want to do a reclamation storyline, you can do it after that. But Reigns wins, turns heel. He can kick Ambrose low and spear him, win it, and trash the crowd on Raw the next night. But I think that's going to happen. That's my pick.
All right. I'm going to say Nikki Bella is Sasha's mystery partner. She's kind of been more active in her tweeting. I think they're really going to wait for Bayley until after SummerSlam.
That's a good pick.
I think match of the night will probably be the main event. I think Zayn Owens will be a close second. I think we're kind of underrating that one a bit. Only because once they get out there and really let loose, it's different than their weekly interactions. And I think, I mean, I'm with you, Nate, that, like, Ambrose has to win. I don't think he is. I mean, everything's pointing towards Reigns winning, and already there's rumors that it's Reigns Rollins is going to go down to SummerSlam. So I think Reigns comes back and wins, and I think he has to go heel. I don't see how you don't. I mean, how can you really go forward with him as a face? So maybe we get a double turn with him and Rollins.
That's what I was thinking. That'd be a good way to go about it. The fans want to cheer Rollins anyway. Just let him do that. Let him boo Reigns, and they get it over with.
And you could play it up, too, that Stephanie, yeah, she made Rollins the number one pick, but they snuck Reigns in there and kind of – remember they kept playing up how Foley wanted him, but Stephanie didn't. You can kind of play it up like it's a, you know, it was all work that Stephanie really did want him, and she's his new chosen one, and because Rollins has let her down, you know. So this,
right, absolutely, you can go off that. I mean, before the injury, they were kind of going towards that way anyway.
Right. So that could be what we see. So.
I'm gonna call you J.R. Kingston because you are really preaching the power of positivity right now. I think that if Roman Reigns does win the title, they're going to try to continue to shove this face run down the fans' throats and use that connection with Foley. Since Foley made the pick, they're gonna try to make Mick the surrogate for Roman and try to give him that rub. And as we saw with the Rock at the Royal Rumble, like it's not gonna work, man. Fans aren't gonna buy it no matter who you put next to this guy.
You're making me crazy, Nate.
And C, Cena, comma John. You know, how often have it's been like 10 years that people are saying they need to change him heel? How do you change him heel?
Yeah, but I think
he's already a heel.
I feel like Reigns, they've acknowledged it more than they ever did with Cena. Like, they'd always say mixed reaction and blah, blah, blah for Cena, but I feel like Reigns, they've, like, talked about disappointing he is, how he's a cheater. You know, I feel like they've kind of brought it out more.
But how can you turn someone a heel who's already heel? Like, what's going to make him booed more? Like stab Daniel Bryan in the throat? Like, what
no,
is he going to be able
do
to
it,
do?
But he'll be aligned with Stephanie. Rollins will be presented as a face. You know what I mean? Like, they'll do like they did with Austin, right? So Austin didn't change his attitude. He just they pivoted everything around him to make him into the face role. So I think they'll just pivot Reigns to
so
the heel
just
role.
Just put him with Stephanie. And here's the only part of that. While it would make sense on a storyline surface, here's the problem with it. You can't award Reigns for getting busted and being on suspension for 30 days. Like, but just not right away.
Yeah, they will.
That won't stop them, I don't think, either.
I think he's winning Sunday. I mean, I think if they were, I think they would have pulled him out of the match if they wanted to really punish him. They just would have did a straight match. I don't think
about punishing him. I'm talking about what it's going to look to people on the outside.
Yeah, I don't think they give a shit. They clearly don't care what other people.
I mean, they're barely acknowledging the Brock Lesnar stuff now as it is.
Yeah, I just don't think they care about what other people think. I mean, I don't. I think anyone who they are afraid would care, like, think it's fake anyway. So they're just like, whatever, you know. And any fans, are you going to stop watching because Reigns wins the title? I mean, you would have at WrestleMania, right? I mean, to me, I don't think they give a shit. Like, it's clear over the last 4 years they really don't care what the fans think.
Yeah, I don't like the fans. I'm thinking more of the people who are giving the mainstream attention, or the more of the, like, your – like how long did they not do, have they not done blood because they're scared of what Mattel's going to say?
Yeah, but so let me say this. I mean, so you're in baseball. A-Rod gets suspended, right? Does he come back and go to the minors or not get – I mean, he went right back and batted cleanup. You know what I mean? So, like, to me – when you look at sports, like, the suspension is the punishment. You know what I mean? Like, that's – because what is he really doing? Like, it's WWE's case is more about wellness because it's not a competition. So because he's juicing doesn't get him pushed necessarily. I mean, yes and no, but so, like, to me, the punishment is he's off 30 days. He loses his pay that he would have gotten, and now he did his time, and he's back here. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, that's the deterrent, is that you have to sit out the time. Like, you know, like anyone, like in any sport, they have to sit out. If in the NFL you get popped, you miss 4 games, you're starting the 5th game. You know what I mean? You're not sitting. You're not being worked back in slowly. So I think that's how they'll look at it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think from me and you, our perspective on that is going to be fine. But I think the way people cover things these days in terms of media attention, and I'm not talking about like the Torch or something like that. I'm, you know, talking about like Bleacher Report or a CBS Sports or, you know, some sort of thing. Like, what if something happens? That's what they're going to be thinking about. What if this is a Benoit? You know, and I'm totally overstating at that point, but that's what I'm thinking they're worried about. Not like, you know, you and I can think of that clearly about, you know, separating the two things. But I don't think people who are in, you know, the viral media are going to cover it that way, where they're looking to cause controversy.
Yeah, we'll see. I'd be surprised if he doesn't win, but maybe he
and will. That's why I think they've said, like, jack shit about Brock Lesnar.
Right.
Like, they have said, like, almost could not say less about.
Well, that's so much more high profile. You know what I mean? That's I mean,
they just said he has not been with us since WrestleMania, and he won't be with us until August 21st. That is all they have said.
All right, just give me your pick quick for a match of the night, Steve.
Zayn Owens, they're going to try to pull out all the stops to steal the show. So I think that's going to be the best match of the night. And they're also my favorites, so I'm totally biased about that. I think that the – is it the Cena-Enzo Cass versus the Club. We haven't talked about that. I think that's going to be a sleeper. It's kind of pushed down the card a little bit, but I think Cena and AJ want to prove that they're the big dogs.
Do you think we get any storyline breakup there with the Club? Because they obviously are going to be on different brands, and I think that's a squandered opportunity that we could have told the story of this breakup. Do you think they do mm-hmm. anything there?
Yeah, they could. They could walk out on AJ and say, screw this, right? They could just say, okay, we're not backing you up anymore. We're not going to get our asses kicked here, and just halfway through the match, just walk out. But that was actually was going to be part of my roundtable, so you can include your answer in that. So here we go. Real quick, lightning round. I'm going to ask you guys a question, like four questions about the card. Just give me a real quick answer. We'll start with Steve. Does Xavier Woods just remain with New Day, or do we further his issues with the Wyatts, like where he keeps getting into the trance?
He'll stay.
Okay. Brian?
I think since they're on different rosters, it's going to end.
Nate?
He will stay.
Okay. More likely to win the undercard title, Zack Ryder or Darren Young, Nate?
Darren Young.
Brian?
Oh, Darren Young, without a doubt.
Steve?
Yeah, Darren Young.
Okay. All right, Brian, I'll start with you on this one. Does AJ Styles pin John Cena to set up their SummerSlam match?
Yes.
Nate?
No, Cena pins AJ because AJ's already got a win over the face that runs the place.
Steve?
Oh, I'm going to say none of the above, and like Cena pins like Anderson or Gallows or something.
Okay. And last one, we'll start with you, Steve. Are any of the Shield guys WWE champion by the end of the year?
Or I thought you were going to say at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah, right. Who
by
knows?
The end of Battleground? Yes. By the end of the year? That's a good question. Yes, because I think there's still going to be two titles.
Nate?
Not to hate on a former Major League Baseball outfielder, but I've always believed in the Shield. Sorry, Delino. But, yeah, I think Seth Rollins is going to be champion as we end 2016.
Brian? 90s baseball is going to be a good reference for us in these shows.
Right?
Fucking old baseball cards.
They could be champions of both brands, too, at this point, I think, if they do have two belts. At least one of them will be. Absolutely.
All right, there you go. And real quick, of course, last week, if you haven't listened, you can still go back and listen because it's a good show. The main event, Brian and Nate joined Scott Criscolo on the main event, and you guys did a mock WWE draft. You did okay, 52% overall, 57% right on your Raw picks, 46% right on your SmackDown picks. You had a few in there that didn't get drafted that you mentioned, like an Emma, Tajiri, Samoa Joe, Nikki Bella. But overall, you guys did pretty well.
And I hate to kind of toot my own horn, but toot. I think Brian, you, and Scott and myself, we probably had a, if not a better draft than what actually happened, at least a more evenly distributed draft.
I'd certainly say so, yes.
It looks like you guys picked Mick Foley and Daniel Bryan, right? At least one of you picked Foley.
Yeah, because I was holding out hope for Eric Bischoff.
That's right. Did you pick Foley, Brian, or did Scott?
I picked Bischoff, actually.
Okay. Actually, you know what? He added Foley in here. It looks like you guys picked Bischoff and MVP. Those
yeah, he picked picks. MVP.
Okay. I was misreading the sheet here. So it looked like you got those both wrong, so you guys suck. But there you go. So definitely go back. Check out Main Event. It's a great companion piece each and every other week, of course. Rotates here with clotheslines and headlines. Get you all caught up weekly on your current wrestling scene. So Mr. Bayless, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be looking forward to checking you out next week on the podcast of Doom, and of course, like you said, each and every week on our Raw recap. And you're gonna keep doing SmackDown?
I can do it for a little while. Sure, I'll do it next week.
There you go, got him on the hook. You all heard it. So all right,
I heard Main Event and Superstars too.
That's you and McGinn, Steve. That's you and McGinn.
Oh, okay, that's right.
All right, why don't we take a break? We're going to come back. We're going to have our buddy. He doesn't like the title, but we're going to call him it anyway, our TNA special correspondent. That's Aaron George. We're going to talk the live deletion. We're going to talk Moose's debut and all of the capital damage, I guess, capital punishment from last week on Impact. And, of course, later in the show, we have the great Brad Stuth joining us, the CWF Booker. And Brad was actually in the final deletion scene and this past week as well, live deletion, the epilogue to final deletion, whatever you want to call it, as one of Matt Hardy's servants. So he's going to talk about his experience filming that with the Hardys, and he will be talking about all the great stuff coming to CWF as well. So take a break. We'll be back with Aaron. We'll be talking some TNA. My heart is broke. I have some good. Place to Be Nations, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
In the pines, in the pines, where the sun never shines, you'll shiver when
my friend, mi amigo, you are so much more than a dilapidated bit. You shielded me from the demonic fire of Brother Nero. You deserve a name. I shall call you Skarsgård. Skarsgård, may I indulge in your usage as we bury the material remains of Brother Nero.
The longest train I ever saw went down that Georgia line. The engine passed at 6 o'clock and the cab went by at night. In the pines, in the pines.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines, your new favorite show, and it's that time again, folks. Time to talk about our old favorite show, question mark. I don't know if it's our favorite show, but it certainly is one of our more rambunctious segments, and you know, we got to talk TNA, and in order to facilitate that, we must bring in our official Impact correspondent, the one and only Aaron George. Aaron, how you doing this week, my brother?
That is the most humiliating title I've ever owned. Just so we're all clear, okay?
Hey, wear it well, my brother.
It's on my heart, and I'm doing super, Nate. How are you?
I am good, as always. And this was an interesting week in TNA, as they often are. Not only did we have a debut last week in the form of former ROH star Moose, we had the Destination X special event, question mark.
Yeah.
And we also had maybe the most compelling question mark that we had going into the last week's show. How would TNA respond to the outpouring of support for Final Deletion? How, or at least, if not support, interest in the Final Deletion? And we saw, not only did we get a live deletion this past week, Brother George, but we also have solved one of wrestling's greatest mysteries as our dilapidated boat now has a name.
Brother Skarsgård. You could just tell. You know what's great about that is it's clear that they listened to the fans on some level. There, it's clear that like the boat got a lot of love, so like fuck it, give it a name.
Oh man, it just to start off the show with this, I was pleasantly surprised because typically whenever TNA does something that if not is good, it's at least memorable. And that this Final Deletion certainly was memorable. You know, they tend to fumble it. So I was pleasantly surprised that they started off the show last week by bringing this back around. And we had, you know,
with the ultra artistic, like, the next day.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And
the dream
great
sequence.
Great scenes with Matt at the house and King Maxwell eating green beans.
And that song, In the Pines.
Oh, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. And Senorita.
Why don't we have any green beans?
They are a delicacy.
So prepare some green beans, but no mustard.
It's just so off the rails, it's wonderful.
You know what's funny, too? I remember the mustard thing from the old Matt Facts back on SmackDown in like 2003 that he didn't like mustard. I remember that being a Matt Fact.
And I don't think maybe one of the most underrated things with this, Aaron, is that a lot of these things are not just random out of the blue references. Like, these are things that you can trace back, you know, through Matt or through Jeff. And like these are, if you follow the Hardys' careers, there are some pretty cool Easter eggs in this whole Final Deletion saga.
Oh, yeah. They've put some thought into this and they're taking it very seriously.
If you're going to do absurdity, taking it seriously is the way to go.
Well, yeah, you got to go with the details, right? Like, it's the details.
Again, that's why this worked and why the Wyatt compound homage, if you will, that we saw from the WWE. That's why I thought part of the reason it didn't connect as much is, A, they kind of rushed it, and B, if you're going to go crazy, go crazy. You know, go nuts, to paraphrase Prince. And I think they only went halfway with the Wyatt thing.
Well, they can't go all the way with the Wyatt thing, because if the Wyatts, if you go all the way, they're raping someone. Like, if you look at those men, that's where the all the way goes with them. So it's good they go with just with the egomaniacal Matt Hardy. They go.
I gotta
with
say though, as a black wrestling fan, got a little uncomfortable with the compound fight, especially due to the events of the past week in America. I was like, how far are we gonna take this, Vince McMahon?
McMahon.
You megalomaniacal genius.
The new wrestling in Japan, or the honorable wrestling.
Oh. Yeah, so not only did we get the vignettes, which were a pleasant surprise, but we also got a live deletion, which didn't work as well because you're in front of that crowd in Orlando. Yeah. But I thought the content of that segment, even if the crowd response wasn't there, I thought the content was still pretty entertaining.
Oh, yeah, he's great. He's so on point right now, it's unreal. But yes, you're right. Like, it just works when he's in his house.
Yes.
Like, we have to go to his house for this stuff.
He needs to be in the kingdom.
Let's see. Like, when he walked out, I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, oh, I don't want to ever see him here again.
I know.
I want them to go to him.
It definitely felt weird.
And then he questioned, like, is his actual house, is the doorway to his son's bedroom a bookcase where you have to pull out a Hardy Boys book for the door to open? And there's
amazing.
A fire in the hole to go to the theater.
Yes.
I hope there's not a real emergency ever there. That kid's not getting out.
Vanguard 1 will protect him.
Well, and as he was coming out too, I was like, why? Like the idea is he almost killed his brother, right? Like, right. Why are they giving this man TV time at this point? Like,
I'm more concerned. Why is Jeff Hardy keep showing up?
I don't understand that at all.
Like, what did he? Did he sign something? Like, I still don't understand why he feels.
There are no binding stipulations with this.
Right. So, like, why does he feel like he has to comply to what Matt has going on?
And he's so sad about it too. He's all dejected and right? Moping to the ring. Like, just stay home.
They definitely put the time in to like tie up the possible holes. Like Matt explaining why he's keeping him around, because he doesn't want him to go be successful elsewhere, because he knows they'll scoop him up and, you know, make money off of him. So it's like, yeah, you know, like taking the time to explain in the most absurd ways what's going on, like, was actually kind of nice. He's like, I am going to keep you around because I'm going to make all the money off of you, not them.
I may be broken, but I'll never be broke.
Yes, that was a great one.
So great. So great. So again, Final Deletion, like, to me, this. And I had made the comment the other night. Somebody had said something, and Matt Hardy had made a tweet in regards to the draft. And I'm like, you know what? It's a wrap. 2016, best character in pro wrestling, broken Matt Hardy. Everybody else is playing for second.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not even close. And I love that he's made "I knew you'd come" into his catchphrase.
Yes.
How long before the crowd is chanting along with that?
Well, probably a lot quicker than it took them to chant along with Moose. So, TNA, new talent, Moose, is in the company. He's in the fold, and he debuted this past week on Impact, showing up at the conclusion of Destination X. So let's real quick, Aaron, let's give the people your thoughts on Destination X as a whole, because I thought it was solid but not spectacular. What were your thoughts on the show?
I hated it.
You hated it.
Like, here's why. It's because, like, to me, this was kind of their chance, right? This they built off. They had the fun deletion the week before, and then they came back, and I found this show was just a labor to get through because it wasn't Destination X. Like, we had a match between Abyss and Bram that felt like it was moving in slow motion. Yeah. Like, you know, like, if you're gonna bring in these viewers and call it Destination X, like, don't. Like, feature the X Division. We had one match with a ladder match with a green piece of wood and an X above the ring for some reason.
Well, the problem with that, Aaron, is they've only got like five dudes in the X Division.
But don't put them on the same
match.
And
they got 2 hours to fill.
And I just think, like, today, like, I've never seen so clear an indication. Because I have this problem with writing and wrestling where I find they tell us stuff instead of showing us stuff. You know, like Michael Cole will say something like, "This is amazing," but it's not actually amazing. Or they'll call EC3 the ass kicking machine, and he's never kicked any ass. You know, like, and it's funny because the final deletion stuff, they don't do any of that. He's crazy. They don't harp on it. He just is crazy. But I found the whole show Destination X just suffered.
When you're
from
talking
that.
About bringing when you're talking about the X Division, if you have so little guys,
Senior that... Benjamin kicked in your door there for a minute.
Did Senior Benjamin kill him? Did he murder him?
Steve, you okay?
I died. I was buried, and I just started wrapping duct tape around my face. I don't know why I did that, but I did, and I just woke up startled and sweaty.
Dilapidated human being.
Well, you're bringing up the Destination X part about having a small X Division. If they can bring in all these guys for these random one-night-only pay-per-views that 12 people buy, like, why don't they just do that on the show when they got a million eyes watching? They taped on the same week. They taped, I think Chuck Taylor was on, a couple other guys they brought in. Throw those guys in there. Put them in that X Division ladder match and then have another match or two with them, with the extra guys you have.
Yeah, or at least make the show look different than your typical WWE show. You know, like, don't have the brawl between EC3 and Galloway that just happens and nothing comes out of it.
Aaron, there's a six-sided ring. How different can they make it?
A lot! They could tell stories that make sense. Like all night, Mike Bennett was like, "I'm going to ruin Impact." It's like, okay, but you attacked one guy backstage, you had a match, and then you brought in a surprise. You made the show better. mission not accomplished, Mike Bennett.
I was waiting for like a Nexus style type deal where they literally destroyed, you know, the set and
yeah.
You know.
Well, and when the whole X Division at one point comes out to confront Mike Bennett, it's like, okay, what sense? Why is Shane Helms a sympathetic character all of a sudden? I'm not gonna like anybody who's wearing that green jacket. Fuck you.
And again, to the point, like, when the entire, in quotes, X Division walks out to stop Mike Bennett, it's like six dudes. And to Steve's point, man, I've always said, I have no idea why they have been short-sighted with the X Division. And it's something, you know, I had the chance to talk to Kenny King about, you know, back in the day. And it's like, man, if you have this quote-unquote division, which is bringing in the best people in the world, you know, it's not about weight limits, it's about no limits, then you should always have kind of this rotating cast of characters. You know, maybe have three or four guys that are there, but it should be no weird occurrence to have somebody like Low-Key just pop up and stick around for a month and then disappear again, or to have, you know, Black G's show up, or to have someone, you know, I'm pissed now that TJ Perkins is gone, because to me, TJ Perkins is a guy, you know, you could have built the X Division around, but it shows a short-sightedness, which is a shame, because in so many other parts of the show, you know, whether you're talking about Final Deletion or whether you're talking about the Lashley Edwards thing, which I thought they actually pulled off well, maybe mm-hmm. the best part of the show not related to the Hardys, you know, you've shown me that you can do well in these areas, so why can't you do it well over the course of the show?
And you can tell they want to. Like, it's weird because, like, before each X Division match, they have that, like, little video package of, like, the X Division is coming up, right? And, like, it's like, okay, these are the things that you could do to make it stand apart. But it's a lot of balls to put that video package and then have Mike Bennett stomp and punch someone for 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's a weird place that they put him in. And, to your point, Mike Bennett's supposed to be this big villain over the course of the show. Didn't really do a lot. And it doesn't help when Matt Hardy is in the arena.
No. Who's going to overshadow
him? There's no way you can compete with that.
No. And it doesn't help when Josh Matthews, every second word is saying Mike Bennett's ruining the show. Like, we're not idiots, Josh Matthews. Like, we're
if you want to be real about it, and this is no disrespect to this man. I guess it is disrespect when I think about it. But the commentary, to me, ruined the show more than Mike Bennett does.
Oh, yeah. They're awful. Like, they're just awful. Like, I don't know what they're doing. Like, this week it wasn't so bad with the Schitt's Creek stuff, because normally it's just like they're just trying to say Schitt's Creek as many times as they can in the 90 minutes. But, perfect example, Rockstar Spud and Braxton Sutter are like – Braxton Sutter knocked out his teeth the week before, right?
They didn't even say anything last week when it happened.
No, and Rockstar Spud and Braxton Sutter tried so hard to tell that story in the ring. Like, you could tell them they would stop, they would speak it, and the commentators just did nothing. Like, nothing to help these two guys out. Like, how can anyone get over when you're not talking about anything that's happening?
Well, and something major where, you know, his mouth is literally exploded and he ran to the back.
Yeah,
and just ignore it.
And here's the other thing. You know, you talk about that credibility that is built up. When you need that credibility to sell your big angle at the end of the show, you know, the debut of Moose, I'm not buying it. Like, I know who Moose is because I've seen him on other platforms. But if I'm somebody who just watches Impact, then why should I be excited about this dude?
Yeah, and you can say, like, it's the hottest free agent in wrestling, but, like...
You gotta get the weird ass fake 1995 Vince McMahon wannabe accent that he's going on, Josh Matthews.
Without any of Vince's good intonation, like he's just the worst. He's got to go. Like I'm a big proponent of commentary being a major part of the show, and like it's unlistenable. Like, and you're right. I think they ruin the show much more than Mike Bennett, but they do that every week. So that's why the Final Deletion stuff is so good to us. Like, we don't hear these guys.
You're better off having no commentary.
Yeah.
You could just, you know, play Moose's music about 10. Like, they needed to turn up the volume on that a bit, too. You know, have him come down. Just have the – you don't have to say anything. Just have him start destroying people and stand up to Lashley. End of show.
Yeah. Well,
and this is something that obviously, you know, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. Give them, you know, time to tell their story. But I did like the way Moose was positioned on the debut. Because to me, either he is A, the lackey of Mike Bennett, which is like, why would you spend all this time hyping up a guy that's the sidekick? Or B, he comes in as your big heel, and I think it's redundant because now you put Lashley in a space where I don't think he works as well as your top babyface.
No, he doesn't. I actually kind of like Lashley as the like competitive heel.
Yes.
I don't think that's a character we see too much, and I think it's interesting. I wish he'd stop wearing the baseball caps. Like he already has the face of a child, and when you put a baseball cap on him, he looks like a baby. And he brings like 8 of them to each taping, but I digress. But he's good at that character, and I don't get really what they're doing with Moose. I mean, Moose was kind of a weird thing in ROH for me. Like I didn't love him. I didn't hate him. He was just kind of there. You know, he's impressive. He's very athletic, but he always needed a mouthpiece in ROH, and I'm curious to see what they do with him going forward here. Like you said, are they just going to stick him with Bennett, or what's happening? What are they going to do?
I always got the impression that they wanted to, in ROH, you know, at first they had like the little deal with Veda and Stokely Hathaway, but after that it was just like, hey, this is Moose, he is athletic, and we want to develop him by putting him up against all the best stars of ROH in New Japan. Like, there was no actual storyline. It was just put him up against everybody and send him on his way.
Yeah. I think go that route, I think he'll be fine.
If you want to tell that story, though, I think the best way to tell that story is with Lashley in that heel role as the guy that's, you know, I'm a legit athlete. you know, nobody can take my spot. And then, you know, you kind of have this meeting between a guy that was in the NFL versus a guy that, was, you know, is an MMA practitioner. It's like that to me would make more sense than to have Moose. And here's the other thing. And it's no shade on Moose because dude is in better shape than probably all three of us will ever be. But when you put him in that ring from a visual standpoint next to Bobby Lashley, Lashley still is the more imposing looking figure. And I feel like the roles need to be flipped because Lashley as a babyface at this point, when all show and the shows leading up to this, he's been beating up poor little tiny Eddie Edwards. Now we're supposed to cheer for this guy. It doesn't make sense.
No. And it just shows that they didn't really think it out. They just wanted the surprise, I think. Like, they don't really know where it's going. And they even brought him in like, the lamest possible way. Like, Mike Bennett kind of gingerly waving to the back. Like, come on, buddy, come on. And then the music, like Steve said, the music at, like, I don't know, like 0.06 decibels.
Yes.
I'm never a fan of vignettes where the dude's on the cell phone's like, are you coming?
Yeah.
Well, you better get here because the show's going to end in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never a fan of the guy that's got to have a good mobile plan to bring in his backup.
And there was the just being scared that it was going to be Tyrus after having the fixer vignette a couple weeks back, and like, oh man, this isn't going to be Moose. This is going to be Tyrus running out.
Tyrus is the worst possible professional wrestler I've ever seen in my life.
And as I was waiting and just like, okay, please be Moose. Like, I was thinking, poor Aaron is watching this right now. And if it's Tyrus, I don't know if he's going to join us.
I don't know if he's going to survive the night.
Well, real quick, last point with Moose, and I think this is, you know, it's a small thing, but it's with TNA, are there really small things? Because that, to me, everything matters with TNA if you're trying to change your image. But you mentioned it, and one of the big things with Moose is he's got athleticism, but he's also got a catchy-ass theme song. And to me, that
Moose,
like, it's a small hook, but to me, if you're trying to get a guy over and get that dead crowd to at least show some life, why not have the guy with the catchy theme song be somebody they can cheer for and do the arm pump and chant the name and have that as some type of crowd participation instead of, now we've got the bad guy, but he's got a hell of a theme song.
When we went to ROH, that tour they had here, and very tiny in a gym in Rhode Island, we took the wives, myself and Roger, and Moose was the one they liked the most. They were doing the chant, and you know, when he came out, and they got really into his entrance and everything else. And then he came out later in the show and interfered in one of the matches or something, and they got all excited again. So he definitely connected. This was a show that had the Bucks and ACH and you know, a few other really good stars, and like Moose was like the most captivating to them, and they're pretty novice as wrestling fans. So I mean, there's definitely something there. He's got some good charisma,
obviously. Something there, but here's the thing with TNA. Like, TNA finds a way each and every week or each and every year to give me what I want in the worst possible way. Like, I should be excited about on a somewhat major promotion, on a somewhat major scale, you've got two black guys fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship. That should make me happy.
Yeah.
But I'm not happy about this. Damn it, TNA.
It's because you have taste and you want a somewhat decent storyline to go with it. Like, you make a debut with the guy. He doesn't really do anything. He just kind of comes out and stands there and stares down. Like, what kind of debut is that? Like, if you've never seen the guy before. And again, you tell me how good he is. Show me how good he is. Let him hit some stuff. Let him like make it decent.
And then if there's going to be no payoff, you know, in the near future, if they're, you know, Bound for Glory's coming up, he's not in the tournament. Moose isn't in there. He's not going to be going for the title at the next big show down the line. So you bring him in, put him face to face with your top guy. There's going to be no payoff for that within the next couple of months.
Well, on the same night you announce a playoff to see who fights the champion, a guy walks in and it like is assumed to be a contender for the title. Like,
that is my pick for most TNA moment of the night was when they announced, you know, they had the big deletion of Jeff Hardy, and then they went directly to the Bound for Glory commercial with Jeff Hardy as
Jeff
a participant.
Hardy.
He's no longer Hardy. It was the whole gimmick of the match.
Oh, TNA. They take two steps forward and two steps back and a step to either side and who knows? Like, can somebody buy this company already? Because the worst thing on the show, in my opinion, and I know Aaron was probably less of a fan of this show than I was, but the worst thing on the show to me was the final 15 seconds where we go backstage and the new blonde announcer girl says, hey, Dixie, what did you think of that? Moose is in the impact zone. And Dixie does her best scrunchy mad face and this is not what I want. Next week we're going to have the same match we just saw, but we're going to put it in the six sides of steel. I'm like, okay, Dixie. Why are you still here?
So what's the deal with that, with the sale? Like, is it something that's actually coming and happening? I mean, I feel like we always see so much about it and hear so much about it. And, you know, the Harris brothers and Toby Keith or whatever the hell it is. That's involved.
And I hate to say it like this, but from everything I've heard, it seems like this big house flipping scheme, you know, where you got people, you know, you got people like Billy Corgan, who's kind of pooling up his money, and you've got, you know, the company that Harris brothers are with pooling up their money, and they're trying to prop this thing up in order to sell it to the highest bidder. But the problem is, I don't think there's that big of a line for TNA. And it's a shame because there's something there. Like, this is not just a company that I think there's no value whatsoever to it. Like, the guys work hard. The girls work hard. There are some creative people in this company. Unfortunately, as long as Dixie Carter is the person in charge and the buck always stops at her feet, I don't think things are going to change. So I'm hoping, man, that somebody will either be smart enough to have a vision for this company and have the capital to go with that vision, or dumb enough, perhaps, to buy this company, if for nothing else, to get it away from Dixie Carter.
I kind of hope if someone does buy it, they just kind of start a new company with the guys. Because the TNA name is so damaged. You got people that hate it just on principle, right?
Oh.
As opposed to anything they're actually doing. So
if I'm somebody that, and this is getting crazy, we need to call Ben Morris because this is getting into comic book territory.
Yes.
The ultimate reboot. If I'm somebody, let's say I had $5 million that I'm not going to spend all of it on TNA, but I don't, what I spend the rest of it is none of your business.
You're being taken if you spend $5 million on TNA.
I got other plans for the rest of that money, but let's say I spend part of that on TNA. I'm coming in and I create Final Deletion as this thing that just kind of is growing. And week by week, it seeps into the regular programming until Matt Hardy deletes the TNA universe and I have to restart with something new.
Matt Hardy's
just sitting in the impact zone and it's just black.
It's just Hardy sitting in the
dark.
There's
no ring. There's just a spotlight on him, and he is the Beyonder. He is going to create the universe.
And it turns out TNA has just been this story that he's been reading us for 15 years or however long the damn company's been open.
He's been reading to Baby Maxo the whole time.
Oh, man.
Of course, it starts with, "I knew you'd come," as he closes the book. Oh, man.
And then we start up the new company. Oh, that's beautiful. That's how you end things.
Yeah, the Matt Hardy promotion.
Oh, man. Oh, I hate that this always has to end, though. This is the fastest 15, 20 minutes of my week every week, Brother George.
Yeah, Brother Milton, it's good. I mean, it's whereas this feels fast, this impact felt like forever. So
this is like a therapy group. We can kind of get all of our emotions out about this crazy product called TNA.
Look, I'll say this. After we finish talking, I never feel as bad as after I finish watching Impact. Like, I feel like after Impact, I've wasted my life. I should be spending time with my kids. Here, it's like, good. I'm good now. I'm good.
Yeah, you know why?
Why?
Because you come here with bad feelings. But then they are deleted.
Oh.
Delete. And speaking of delete, we're going to delete this. Well, I was going to say we're going to delete this segment, but then it's like, what the hell did we do for the last 20 minutes?
Aaron tried to delete it about 3 minutes ago, but we made it through.
We're going to end the segment. No,
he must
no
be
deletion.
Working for Mr. McMahon.
The megalomaniac.
Oh, that is great. But we're going to end this segment, not delete it. But don't worry, because we're going to come back on the other side with somebody who is very familiar with what goes down in Hardy Land, and that is CWF head booker Brad Stutz. So don't you go anywhere. We got more clotheslines and headlines after this.
Set this place.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
And we are back. Third episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. We have talked WWE. We have talked TNA. And we like to go a little bit around the world. This time, though, we're going to stay on the East Coast. And we're going to bring in a very special guest. Someone who's had some recent experience in TNA. Also known for some great indie matches that are happening on the North Carolina scene. He is the matchmaker and lead announcer from CWF. And contributor to Place to Be Nation with the great Graham Cawthon, and that is Brad Stutz. Brad, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you guys for having me.
Now, Brad, you made some wonderful surprise appearances that got some huge pops out of the Place to Be Nation. There was chats going on. It's like, oh my God, is that Brad? Just basically made our night almost more so than the fact that the Final Deletion aftermath was taking place. Can you kind of tell us how you got involved, how you found out? Was it kind of a big surprise for you?
Yes, absolutely. I've known Matt probably since I was 12 years old, something like that. I was, for anyone that is a regular listener on Place to Be on the shows I've been on, they may have heard this before. I'll give the abridged version of it. Mm-hmm. Basically, in the Carolinas, I was that kid that was at every independent show. You know, every town has, you know, some, every regular promotion has those fans that are there every week diligently. It's like religion to them. And that was me. That was me and a couple of other guys that have gone on to do things in the business around the Carolinas. That was us. My dad had a big van that he would swing by and pick everybody up in, and we were going to wrestling every Saturday. So, you know, Matt and Jeff and Joey Matthews, Shane Helms, Champagne, Marty Garner, for anybody that remembers him. You know, I've known all those guys since I was 10 years old. And I've gotten the chance to do a lot of cool stuff with them since then, you know, doing commentary for Omega, doing whatever. Matt and Jeff have both very graciously popped into CWF on occasion. So I've always had a good rapport with them. And Rebby actually hit me up and said, hey, We've got this idea. Would you want to do it? Would you be around? And I was like, yes, of course. Gosh, after, you know, 16 years, it'd be nice to do something that, that people are going to see on a big scale, on a big stage. So yeah. And they hit me up and Matt hit me up, shortly thereafter. And we kind of tossed some ideas around and, basically he was like, you know, I think it'd be cool to really create sort of a textured, universe wherein, you know, we, and I think it's very smart of him to do that. I think it was very smart to say, you know, we need to create a universe where this happens so that it's not just this standalone thing. We see these people at home or we see them, you know, in other places and we understand that they have a place in a bigger universe. You know, I love Chikara and that's one of the things I love about Chikara is they create this rich universe where their shows take place. And, you know, these characters that seem preposterous, all of this, they make sense in that world. And I think that was really the goal behind this follow-up video was to shoot some content that kind of saw these characters fitting into the real world or a version of the real world. And, you know, somebody, we were talking about it there in between shots and someone made the comment that like, wow, you guys are taking wrestling back to where it needs to be. You know, you're taking wrestling back to, you know, Ultimate Warrior and Papa Shango and that kind of stuff. And I thought that was a very interesting remark to overhear because I remember being a child during that and not really feeling affected by it one way or the other. But I remember a lot of adults kind of rolling their eyes and groaning at the Papa Shango stuff when I was a kid. And I think literally times have changed now where for whatever reason, the stuff that they're doing, the stuff that Matt and them have cooked up kind of has an endearing, campy, ironic sort of quality to it. And it's very interesting to me to see it so universally embraced. But yeah, it was a blast. It was fantastic to get to hang out with everybody and have a small part in it. I didn't really tell anybody, just in case, a tip for anybody out there aspiring to do things. I didn't tell anybody just in case I got cut. Because if I did get cut, I wasn't going to be, you know, sitting around with my family watching it and bummed out. So I didn't tell anybody other than my wife.
Yeah, Andy Stutz, the disappointment.
My wife is in the theater shot. There's not like a clear shot of her, but my wife is in the mob in the theater. And one of our referees from CWF Mid-Atlantic, who's also a production assistant, helped out and was like holding the boom mic and stuff like that. But they were the only two that knew. I didn't smarten anybody else up just in case. I thought it would be a better surprise than to tell people and then, you know, tune in and I'm not there. But yeah, and immediately it was, you know, I've very, very fortunate to have been kind of showered with a lot of well wishes and people saying that they popped or marked out and they thought it was cool. Trevor Lee, who's, you know, one of my good friends, one of the guys that's absolutely, you know, bending over backwards to help put CWF on the map. Trevor was the first one to hit me up because, you know, they tape a little bit ahead of live. So, you know, they're taping the show at like 7 p.m. Eastern to air at 9 p.m. Eastern or whatever. It's a quick turnaround. So he and Andrew Everett were the first ones to see it because they were watching the playback as they were taping the episode. And again, I didn't smarten them up either. So he sent me a real nice note and got a lot of people just sending me really, really nice messages and that they popped for seeing it and that they liked what we were doing. And I loved the finished product. I thought a lot of the humor that was very much improv and just kind of thrown out there, I was happy that they kept. The Romanian maid was fantastic.
Senor Rita.
I'm so happy with that because literally it was very, you know, it felt to me, and this has always been my experiences at CWF or at the independent level, but this felt to me like how I feel like wrestling should feel. And that is, it had that level of improvisation to it. There weren't, you know, scripts being passed around or anything like that. This was, you know, a vision that everyone was kind of working to bring to life. But, but some of the things that, you know, I or someone else had shouted out, like, why don't we do this? I was very happy to see make it into the final cut, and the Romanian maid was fantastic. I absolutely loved her, and I loved her little interactions and everything. And Matt it was cool to me as somebody that, like I said, has known Matt since I was a kid. It's cool to see him just kind of thriving and loving the stuff that they're doing.
How do you not laugh? How do you not laugh or like was everyone dying doing this stuff? Because I don't know how you made it through. I mean, it's so absurd.
No, it was a lot of waiting until there's a cut, waiting until there's a moment that you can. But yeah, my favorite moment in the whole thing, honestly, is when she corrects him that she's not Spanish, she's Romanian, and he's without missing a beat. Matt goes, "Wonderful." That was the moment where I think everybody broke a little bit or tried to hold it in, because just without missing a beat, it's wonderful. But no, it was a blast, honestly. And there were, you know, babies roaming around because they had, you know, they wanted the shot of Maxwell and his friends watching it, and little baby chairs set up in the theater, and like all that stuff is legit. Like, he really has a theater in his house, and I did not know about the fire pole until
that
I got
was, that was great.
and it's from the kids' Maxwell's room to the theater. That's what we were talking about earlier.
It goes from the playroom down to the theater. And I did not know about that. I had been around some, but I had never seen or never noticed that. And I was just like, is this legit? Did we build this for this? Or is this legit? They're like, no, it's legit. Like, and I was just like, so you're in the playroom and you just got to get to the theater real quick and just, man. Rebby actually made the comment. She said, I'm glad that Matt let me build this preposterous, ridiculous house that I wanted now, because we have all this cool stuff we can use at our disposal, you know, this thing, which wasn't, I don't think that was a grand plan, but it's a nice benefit. But yeah, I can't say enough. They're all super people. And it was a great experience. It was really, really cool. Morale was high, as Shane Helms would say.
Do you think they'll... go ahead, Nate.
Okay, I was just going to say, Brad, it's very rare that you get consensus or even anything close to consensus when you talk about pro wrestling. And this is something, you know, I've been high on Final Deletion since I saw, you know, the absurdity of what went down. And you know, I've kind of compared it to R. Kelly's Trapped in the Closet, where it's this thing that is so absurd, but it's also so artistic and so detailed. And I think for the most part, wrestling fans who are notoriously fickle, they've been down with this. What's been your experience with the reaction to Final Deletion and to the aftermath of Final Deletion and to everything that is involved with this crazy saga?
I think that's a great way of putting it, actually. I think that's a very articulate way of putting it, because I think that's the charm more than anything. I think that it has that artistic quality. It has some craftsmanship to it.
Yes.
And I think that's the big difference from, you know, think of any horrible skit that you've seen in your life. I always go back to, like, what was it? The Undertaker trying to embalm Steve Austin, and you know, he had him on the table. You know, think of any preposterous skit that you hated, and you know, contrasting it to that. I think that's the big difference. Is there some soul in this? And the production values are fantastic. Like I'm racking my brain, other than maybe Lucha Underground. I'm thinking this is probably the first thing in wrestling that's used a drone, you know, successfully and incorporated that element into it.
You know, it's not just the drone stunts. It's Vanguard One, thank you.
That's true. Well, that's one of many. But I think that's very redeeming to know that there's some soul and some thought and some vision being put into this. It's not just, you know, guys
screwing around. It's not a publicity stunt. You know, to varying degrees, everything is a publicity stunt because you're trying to get people to watch the show. But I think that's the thing that really redeems it and makes it kind of universally appealing is, you know, the first minute or so, you're like, what the hell is this? But, you know, you can't take your eyes off of it, and it draws you into this universe, this crazy universe where we speak in weird voices and say weird things and have, you know, obscenely good production values for some reason.
And it doesn't work unless everyone commits. And I think that's the big difference between this and some of the other things that you mentioned. Like, Matt Hardy is going for this 150%. Like, there is no half-stepping in this. And I think the fact that he's committed and Jeff's committed and Rebby and Senior Benjamin and everybody else involved with this, that everybody else is treating this as reality, it draws the viewer in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I tell you, it's something that you don't hear a lot about anymore. There was a documentary a couple years ago that ended up on Netflix. But when I was a kid, one of my absolute favorite wrestling properties was GLOW. And to this day, man. I tell all the students that come through our school, I tell anybody that will listen, GLOW had the best simple, easy to digest sort of character promos of anything ever, because every girl had a minute to just be like, you know, I'm Susie Spirit the cheerleader, or I'm the farmer's daughter, or I'm Palestina the terrorist, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, I always tell kids coming up through our wrestling school that, you know, you should be able to tell me who you are succinctly. That doesn't necessarily mean that a character should be one-dimensional and have no layers. But, you know, if you meet somebody in the grocery store and they go, oh, you're a wrestler, what's your deal? You should be able to tell them in a line or so. And I always thought that was really, really great sort of character development. And I think the same is true here. You know, it maybe takes a little bit to put in context or whatever, but in a nucleus, you can be like, oh man, Matt Hardy's got all this money and he's gone insane and he's kind of like Gomez Adams, Sweeney Todd, whatever. You got to check it out. And, you know, you can still kind of put that succinct, because that literally, we're standing around Matt's real house shooting this stuff, and I'm like, this is the An Adams Family. Like, it literally is what I felt like we were doing. I was like, we're doing the Adams Family here. But I think that's important, that you can kind of succinctly explain it, and sort of, even if there's stuff to think about, it should be easily digested, I guess is what I'm getting at. And I think this has that quality to it.
Hey, Brad, do you think they're going to keep churning these out? Like, what's the plan for them? I mean, if you don't know, that's fine. Or if you do and you can't say, that's okay too. But are they going to keep running these things out in this format? Are we going to see a move more towards the arena like we did last week, where it was kind of split? I mean, we were talking about it earlier. I think it's best served like in this, you know, Addis Family universe, where it's part of TNA, but completely separate from TNA, where it's just this whole other world going on. And like, don't even go in the arena if you don't have to. Have all your matches in the backyard, you know, do all, like, just keep it there. It's so unique and so different. Where do you see them going with it?
I completely agree. I think creatively it was perhaps a misstep to get them back in the arena so fast. But I mean, I get it. It's a TV show and you want people to come and you want people to, you know, you want the stuff that's happening in the arena to be of importance and consequence. But yeah, I completely agree. I would have kept them, you know, in the house, I would have kept them in Cameron, for longer and maybe built up to something. As for what's next, as for what the next step is, the next step is everyone within the sound of my voice, tweet Matt Hardy at Matt Hardy Brand, tweet at Impact Wrestling, and tweet at Hardy Scribe, and tell them that you want to see more of the Scribe in every segment possible. That's the next step. Yes, we can. No, I have no idea what the overall direction is. I will certainly come if they call. I feel a little bit more comfortable telling people if it happens again, then I won't end up on the cutting room floor. So, I don't know. There, you know, I was not, you know, privy to any of that. I agree, though. I think it was a mistake to, well, not a mistake, but I think it may have been short-sighted to get them back in the arena so fast. And it would not surprise me if other people involved shared that opinion, but we did not get a chance to discuss it. I think it could have been cooler to keep them in their own little world for a little while and then sort of build up to everyone coming back together in a bigger scene. But, you know, it's weekly TV, and we run not quite weekly TV, but we run, you know, 40 live events a year. So I get the burden that can bring and the, you know, sometimes, and this goes true for WWE also. I feel like I'm sort of a WWE sympathizer in a lot of ways because I get it. You know, there's a lot of times when you produce so many shows, when you churn out so much content, quite frankly, you find yourself in a lot of situations where a good plan today is better than a perfect plan tomorrow. Mm. You know, I think that happens with a lot of wrestling properties. So I'm not gonna say it was a mistake, but I get, you know, the desire to, oh, this is the hottest thing we have. We need to get them in the Bound for the Glory series, or get them in this, or get them on that, or whatever. I get that. But yeah, if they had the luxury, I think it could have been cool to explore that universe more thoroughly for several weeks before we saw them in the Impact Zone again. But that's just me.
And I think you can have, like you said, too, kind of this dual world going on. And we talked about it before you were on, too, with our buddy Aaron. And I like earlier what you said about the improvisation that's so badly needed. And I like that with Final Deletion, it was more of this intelligent absurdity. I if I could coin an odd oxymoronic phrase, as opposed to, like, you know, your Attitude Era stupid, you know, absurdity, like, hey, they gave birth to a hand.
I agree.
And going back to the WWE, which you just kind of brought up, I think that they, what we also talked about early in the show, had a little bit of that improv. If you watched the Draft Central, they did not have really as much script, and you got to see just characters being characters and letting their creative side go. You know, the Hardys are masters at it from what it seems like. And you saw a lot with Matt and ROH doing the same thing. The WWE guys have that as well. They don't get to show it as much. They started to be able to show it last night, just not on the regular show. With that regular show, I know you had some thoughts in the draft that you wanted to share. Like, any particular things for you that stood out, positive, negative?
I feel like it was a mostly positive experience. I think, you know, the big advantage to the whole thing, no matter who you like, who you don't like, what makes you happy, what makes you sad, the big advantage to the whole thing is it makes SmackDown feel like anything other than the reheated Raw leftovers, which I think was crucial, because even with good wrestling, that show has felt so skippable for so long. And so to give it its own identity in any way is a good thing. I agreed with most all the NXT picks. And I know that was a source of contention. But I think, you know, anyone that was angered by the NXT picks or by the seeming lack of logic in them, I think you have to look at it like a content provider and like a content creator. You know, you don't draft the top six people out of NXT because that cannibalizes the brand, and they still have a television show, they still have a touring property. You can't just pluck Nakamura out and replace him with Bobby Roode. And that's nothing against Bobby Roode, but you draft the people that you've either done all you can do creatively with them, you know, and that's Balor and that's American Alpha, or you draft the people that maybe have hit their ceiling down there and it's time to fish or cut bait with them. And I think that's Mojo, Nia Jax, and Carmella. You know, like Nia Jax or Carmella could have won the women's title and had a run with it. But, you know, beyond that, then that's probably more of a timing issue than anything. You know, they had pretty much hit their ceiling. The only true prospect that NXT lost is Alexa Bliss. You know, they could have done a lot more with her in NXT, but I didn't feel like it was an egregious loss because they've both been down there for a while. Now they'll just develop on the main roster instead of developing on, you know, house shows in Florida or whatever. But I thought Alexa Bliss was a great pickup. Her verbal ability is so fantastic and so beyond what they have touched on that I'm intrigued to see how that goes. You know, Intercontinental and United States titles I thought was interesting, especially going into the pay-per-view. You've got You've got Ryder and Miz on SmackDown, and you've got Rusev and Darren Young on Raw. So, like, either title could switch shows. I don't think you do that because I think, again, you got to look at it as, like, you know, putting content together. You're looking at building SummerSlam now. You're looking at putting that card together. There's only so many spots on that, and where do your key players fit? And I feel like Miz with Maurice and Rusev with Lana definitely make the cut for that before Ryder or Darren Young. So I think either title changing on Sunday would really surprise me unless they change it right back immediately at TV. But I like the hook. I like the intrigue of, you know, for the show Sunday, that either mm-hmm. title could switch shows based on who wins that match. Same thing for the triple threat. You know, there's a 2/3 chance that the title goes to Raw, and there's a 1/3 chance that it stays with Dean on SmackDown. I thought all that stuff was clever. You know, not really any long-term effects, but it was clever to do to build specifically to the show Sunday. I liked that a lot. Let's see what else. Oh, Kalisto on SmackDown. Seems like a weird choice. I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about it. And I don't know anything about anything other than I've had to put together a lot of shows in my time. But I would venture to guess that somebody, or perhaps a group of somebodies, feel like he will stand out more and truly could be like a new Rey Mysterio on SmackDown rather than being one face in the crowd on Raw. That's a thought from me. I don't know anything about anything, but if I'm asking myself why they did that when the more obvious choice would seem like putting him on the cruiserweight show, that tells me that someone is probably fighting for him to become more special on the other show. Potentially, at least. I think there's certainly potential for that. I really want to see who gets picked up that are the true free agents out there kind of roaming the earth. The Brian Kendricks, the Shelton Benjamins, the whoever. I want to see who gets brought up from those guys. Let's see. That's most of it. Oh, I'm supremely real quick, happy.
Brad, real quick, I just want to touch on this while it's on my brain. You brought up a guy that could be a face in the crowd and just kind of blend in and versus a guy that could be special and stand out. And I think one of the picks that caused a lot of head scratching, at least on social media, was Cesaro going to Raw, where I think most people felt, and even I think he alluded to it in his comments on the network after the draft, you know, he might have had a bigger chance to shine on SmackDown. And granted, you know, like you said, these are people trying to put together a show, and Raw is 3 hours, and it's going to be 3 hours for the foreseeable future. But do you think that's a bit of a missed opportunity there, not moving Cesaro to SmackDown?
Boy, that's a good question. Cesaro has just been the most, the guy they've missed the boat on the most in recent memory. So I don't know if he finds himself on Superstars in the next 6 to 12 weeks more than he is on Raw, then yeah, that's a bad sign. Or he could find himself in a great position on Raw where there will always be more time to have longer matches and things of that nature. You know, I guess it all depends on positioning. It all depends, you know, you can't really say, oh, this person's better on Raw or this person's better on SmackDown until we see how those shows unfold. On paper, he would have seemed like a natural choice to anchor SmackDown. I agree. But who knows? They could, you know, this could finally be the time. You know, I was there in the Superdome, and when he won that Battle Royal, you know, I said, you know, holy crap, this is it. You know, by the time I got back to our hotel from 30, I had already booked, you know, the next year or so. And, in my head, and a big part of that was, you know, Brian drops to Lesnar at SummerSlam and we get Lesnar and Cesaro at some point, you know, having an incredible run up to the point where Lesnar would drop to Reigns. That, especially once Heyman got involved with Cesaro, that just seemed like such the natural to have these two like freakish, incredible athletes against each other. And maybe we'll still get that someday, but yeah, pretty much ever since then, I feel like so many people have just been chomping at the bit waiting for Cesaro to get that chance. I don't know, you know, we'll see where everybody ends up. I was very happy that Big Show, Mark Henry, Swagger, and Rusev all went to the same show. Big fan of the Hoss division, big fan of just watching those guys just beat the tar out of each other like it's 1984 in Houston. So I'm very happy that they all stayed together. I was really intrigued that New Day, Enzo and Cass, and Golden Truth all went to Raw.
Yeah.
It would certainly seem like even if you just sent Golden, I would have sent Enzo and Cass to SmackDown, but even if you just sent Golden Truth to SmackDown, it would seem like you would want a sort of comedic babyface opening match act on SmackDown. And I was very surprised to see all three of those teams who are kind of, you know, to varying degrees of relevance, all have such a similar act. I was very surprised to see them all go to Raw. I thought that was interesting. I don't know what it means, if anything, but I thought it was interesting. But overall, I got most of it, I feel like, and you know, even the stuff that I didn't get, even the stuff that seemed like a head scratcher, you know, it's all based on positioning. It's all based on where they go from here. So it does in a lot of instances feel like a clean slate coming up Sunday and coming up at TV. And I think that's always exciting. That's always interesting as a viewer. So good for them. Cause I think the brand split has been due for a while now. Cause SmackDown is just, like I said, SmackDown has just been on autopilot for so long that it's going to liven up that show so much, if for no other reason than it's the only place to go see these people now. It's not literally doing the same match Monday that we just did on Friday, you know, that, or you know, Thursday, whatever. That's going to be a big help, I think, in the TV feeling fresher.
Hey, Brad. So let's divert a little bit here off the draft, because we want to get into, like we mentioned earlier, the booker for CWF. Been getting a lot of buzz lately, guys like Trevor Lee, Andrew Everett having standout matches. Talk to us a little bit about the promotion. Give us a hook for people that want to check it out on YouTube. And then we're going to have you back in a couple weeks, if you don't mind, to join us with Chad Campbell. And we'll talk more CWF. And also we want to talk some Scenic City, since you'll be doing the announcing for that. So we'll do that in a couple weeks. But kind of give us a little primer here. Stuff people can check out between now and our next show for CWF.
Yeah, I can't wait to get down to the Scenic City Invitational. Thanks to everybody on the crew down there for inviting me. I'm super looking forward to it. The first weekend of August, just outside of Chattanooga. But CWF Mid-Atlantic, basically it's studio wrestling. It's wrestling like you might remember from, you know, the 80s, or you might have, if you're too young, might see on YouTube from the 80s. It's the whole idea, the whole mindset is, you know, what if 20th century, you know, studio wrestling that we watched, a lot of us watched and grew up on, that was so big in the Carolinas, you know, what if that style of wrestling, whether you're from the Carolinas or you're from Memphis or you're from the Mid-South or you're from Texas, you know, what if that style of wrestling had survived into the 21st century? You know, what would it look like, feel like, sound like? That classic traditional presentation with 21st century athletes. That's it in a nutshell. That's what we've always gone for. We release all of our stuff on YouTube, absolutely free. Subscribe so you don't miss it. We're at youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. New episodes of our web series, CWF Worldwide, drop every Wednesday. Episode 60 has the amazing Trevor Lee versus Andrew Everett match for the Mid-Atlantic title that, gosh, hundreds of people have been praising on social media. Episode 61 has an awesome Cedric Alexander Ultra J title defense against Chet Sterling, who I think is going to be the next breakout guy in the Carolinas. Thanks to our friends at Nova Pro Wrestling for that. The brand new show that just dropped tonight, episode 62, starts our summer-long Weaver Cup tournament. Johnny Weaver was a booker, he was a wrestler, he was a commentator, he was a jack of all trades with Jim Crockett Promotions, and really just a well-known, well-respected figure in the Carolinas for decades. So every year we have this summer-long tournament, the Weaver Cup. And, the whole tournament, every match, every moment, will be free on YouTube. It's at youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. We're on Twitter at CWF Mid-Atlantic. If you're anywhere in the Carolinas, check us out. If you're anywhere in DC, Maryland, or Virginia, check out Nova Pro Wrestling, our sister promotion in Virginia. They're on Twitter at VA Wrestling. And coming up, we're back at our venue, the Mid-Atlantic Exploratorium, this Saturday. And then Nova Pro in Fairfax, Virginia on Friday, August 12th. And then we're back at the Sportatorium in North Carolina on Saturday, August 13th. So a nice little double shot weekend coming up for everybody. We have a blast. It's traditional. It's logical. It is not sports entertainment. It's wrestling.
Speaking my language right now.
I think there's a big pocket of us, and we all kind of found each other who were so regularly infuriated by things that were happening on our television, and I still am. I'm regularly infuriated when I go on Twitter and see people, bad-mouthing Jim Cornette or people bad-mouthing, old-school wrestling or the way that it, kind of is supposed to be. Because I have a very strong belief that it can still be presented that way in the new era. And so that's what we strive for. There are flips, and there is, fighting in the crowd, and there is, amazing athletic things with Cedric Alexander and Andrew Everett, Trevor Lee and Eric Royal and Chet Sterling and all these amazing wrestlers. But it's presented like, studio wrestling, from the 80s. It's presented in that traditional classic way. It feels like, you're watching Memphis or watching Mid-South or watching, Crockett Promotions. That's why we named the show Worldwide, both because putting it on YouTube opened it up to that worldwide audience. But at the same time, we wanted to kind of pay homage to worldwide wrestling that we all grew up with in the Carolinas. That's the feel that we go for. That's the vibe that we go for. And it's been great to find sort of an audience that digs that after spending a lot of years just producing television in a little room that not a lot of people were watching. It's been great to find an audience that says, yes, this is the kind of wrestling that I remember. This is the kind of wrestling that I like, nothing against anybody else, but I looked around one day and everybody just kind of looked the same and felt the same. And, there were 40 super kicks on a show and 30, dives. And I don't know. I like that we have great big guys, we got small guys, we got normal size guys, we got wrestlers, we got brawlers, we got high flyers. We try to have something for everybody. So that's it in a nutshell.
Awesome.
Well, and I think
Steve, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that, and I think that's the nice key, is that you can have all those things. You can have 40 super kicks, you can have a comedy match, you can have big guys going at it. You just need the ring, and in the case of Final Deletion, you don't even need the ring anymore to produce good television.
Vince Russo's dream.
All you need is a dilapidated boat.
They did technically have a ring. It was just in a field.
Brad, we thank you so much for coming on and giving us a little bit of backstage, you know, behind the scenes stuff with Bond of the Leashin. And you've sold me. Like Chad Campbell, our guy, has been trying to get me in on CWF. And when you say old school, you know, kind of logical with 21st century athletes, you have me sold on that. So I will be checking it out. So, Brad, thank you. We'll have you back in a couple of weeks, hopefully, to talk a little bit more.
And that sounds great.
Brad Stutz, great as always. Underutilized. He likes Cesaro at PlaceTribunation.com. We're going to get him back in the rotation a little bit more. And he will be back. It's already locked up 2 weeks from tonight. We'll have him. We'll have Chad Campbell here, maybe, if we allow him on. They'll talk some more CWF, and they'll be previewing the Scenic City Invitational, which will be happening, I think, that weekend right after. So we'll be covering that, and then we'll be doing some Ring of Honor, actually, because the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly, will be with us in 2 weeks. He's going to cover his new role, his new position at Ring of Honor. He'll be previewing you know, the upcoming shows, and he's also going to give an update on his podcast, The Kevin Kelly Show, here at PlayStation.com. So he'll be joining us in 2 weeks' time. Brad Stutz will be here. We'll be talking WWE as well, and maybe we'll give Aaron George the week off. We'll let him catch his breath a little bit from the disaster of TNA, but who knows? Maybe we'll force him, because if this stuff keeps coming out, we got to keep having him on. So any final thoughts from you guys, Nate or Steve?
I'll allow you to go first, Brother Willie.
Well, yeah. Hey, check out some New Japan Pro Wrestling. We were going to talk Japan, but we got so excited about the draft and final deletion. I'm going to be I signed up. I'm going to watch Super J Cup this weekend.
And from my end, first of all, another great week talking with you fellas. This is rapidly becoming one of my favorite endeavors here on these podcast streets. But again, for those that know me well, I am not a podcast monogamous, so I hope that everybody is checking me out, and we've got Brian Mann, who I hope to get on Clotheslines and Headlines one of these weeks if I can drag him away from political conventions. Brian Mann and I are working on some good stuff, so if you like the political arena as well as the wrestling arena, stay tuned, because that's going to be good as well. So, yeah, it's been a fun week, and now I'm going to go Google Nia Jax strictly for research purposes, fellas.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get Wei Ting on. That'd be the biggest get here at PlayStation.com.
If I can get Wei Ting on here, I might as well call it a career, because you know, that would be my dream right here. All of my now we need to get Wei Ting, Marcus, all of my podcast spouses together,
and Nia Jax, just her stare from, like, you know, her lip up to her forehead.
This has been better than the whole Kim Kardashian Taylor Swift thing.
It has been.
And I've been recording it, so it fits in perfectly. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up. We'll end on that note. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Be sure to check out everything at PlayStation.com. All of our podcasts.
Curtis, I'm suing. I am suing.
Scott and I. Hey, shake it off, Willie. Shake it off.
Don't ever shake off the Willie. So Scott and I will be check out. Oh, God. Unforgiven 2006 Vintage Vault. That went up Monday night. We'll be back next 2 weeks. We'll be back with Kevin Kelly, Brad Stutz, and the rest. Close eyes and headlines. Thanks for watching. It's going to be all right. Because the players going to play. And the haters going to hate, baby. I'm just going to shake. Shake it off. Shake it off.
Shake. Yeah. 'Cause the players gonna play. And my haters gonna hate. I'm just gonna shake. Shake it out.